Dr. B.R. Ambedkar Open University presents Education at Your Doorstep, a program of learning for everyone.
Hello listeners, we now bring you a lesson from English for UG third year students. The title is T.S. Eliot's Tradition and Individual Talent. Dr. K. Rani Rajita Madhuri will present the lesson.
Dear listeners, today we are going to learn about T.S. Eliot and his contribution to the tradition of literary criticism in English. Towards the end of the Victorian age, there were new movements and trends in English poetry as illustrated by the Pre-Raphaelite movement, the aesthetic movement which indicated a kind of revolt against the Victorian values like order, balance, restraint, and reason. These values were appropriate for the Victorians, but some of the later Victorians rebelled against these values, particularly against the Victorian complacency that all is well with the world. This rebellious trend extended into the 20th century because the writers of the new generation voiced their criticism against the Victorian values like obedience of authority, permanence of institutions, and the superficial self-complacency. For example, H.G. Wells made fun of the Victorian culture while emphasizing the need to question. George Bernard Shaw considered that the right to question and verify the validity of everything in life and in society is an essential duty of every man in the modern age. As a result of universal education, many sections of the masses were now educated and they hated the hypocritical values of the Victorian age. Further, modern science, with its focus on objective observation and experimental verification, underscored the importance of the scientific approach in arriving at the truth of things. In addition, the consequences of the Industrial Revolution, which was made possible by the advent of the machine and the profits of it, brought to the business classes, stressed the importance of materialism and the value of money. Against this background, the Victorian morality, idealism, and spiritualism proved themselves to be meaningless. Further, the two world wars clearly proved that idealism, humanism, and spiritualism were beautiful phrases only to hear, but they had no relevance to modern life. In such a situation, the poets of the modern age had to search for new themes of poetry and new poetic idiom totally different from those of their predecessors. The beauty of nature, the nobility of man, and figurative language no longer appealed to the modern readers. Therefore, the poets had to select themselves from the contemporary social life. Themes relating to complexities of urban life, and further, they had to use a language suitable to their subject matter. Thus, imagism and symbolism emerged as the new movements in poetry. Of all the modern poets, two poets stand above the others as towering personalities. First, Thomas Sterne Eliot, popularly known as T.S. Eliot, and the William Butler Yeats. Both were Nobel laureates, but each had a distinctive style of his own. Yeats was mainly a symbolist, an anti-rationalist, a dreamer, a visionary, and a romantic. Eliot, on the other hand, was a great poet and a great critic. As a poet, he was a classicist and a modernist at the same time. Eliot is considered to be the greatest among the modern poets. One of his major poetic works is The Wasteland, published in 1922. Let us discuss Eliot's essay, Tradition and the Individual Talent. It is published in a monthly paper in 1919 and it consists of three parts. In the first part, Eliot deals with the concept of tradition and explains how it influences an individual poet. Eliot observes that the word tradition is often referred to in a negative sense in English writing. Very often, its connotation is no longer better than some pleasing archaeological reconstruction. As a nation, the Englishmen recognize that the French are more critical, as if the French were less spontaneous than themselves. They seem to consider creative genius superior to critical talents and praise the individual poet's creative abilities rather than considering the influence of tradition on him. But Eliot says, criticism is an inevitable as breathing, and he explains the role of tradition in the making of a poet. Tradition is a matter of much wider significance. It cannot be inherited, and if you want it, you must obtain it by great labor. It involves, in the first place, the historical sense, which we may call nearly indispensable to anyone who would continue to be poet beyond his 25th century. And the historical sense involves a perception not only of the pastness of the past, but of its presence. The historical sense compels a man to write not merely with his own generation in his bones, but with a feeling that the whole of literature of his own country has a simultaneous existence and composes a simultaneous order. This historical sense, which is a sense of the timeless as well as the temporal and of the timeless and the temporal together, is what makes a writer traditional, and it is at the same time what makes a writer most acutely conscious of his place in time, of his own contemporaneity. In this light, Eliot says that a poet or an artist has no complete meaning of his own. His meaning has a relation to the dead poets and artists. That is, a poet himself belongs to the tradition of poetry when a poet's work is thus related to the past works of the art. The existing whole of great works of poetry is modified. This does not mean that the existing whole is not complete. Its totality continues with slight internal adjustments with the addition of the new work of poetry or art. This is what Eliot means by conformity on the part of a real poet to tradition. That is, such conformity is necessary between the old and the new. It is in this context that a poet has great difficulties and responsibilities. For the poet knows that he will be judged by the standards of the past, and at the same time, he should also establish his own talent. An individual poet is different from the poets of the past. Hence, his poetic work should conform to the past and also reveal something new and original on his own part. This is the difficulty faced by a real poet. In other words, the poet, when he conforms to tradition, should not take tradition as a formless lump or confine himself to one or two poets or periods of the past. He should take it as a continuous flow and conform to its main current. When he does so in his poetry, he does not reflect his own private mind, but represents the mind of Europe and the mind of his own country. Thus, the great poets of the past, like Homer or Shakespeare, are not forgotten, but they continue to be alive in the new poetry. This shows the development, the refinement, and the complication of the poetic process. Explaining that the poet's awareness of the past is not a mere historical awareness, Eliot points out that some people can absorb knowledge without much of hard labor or erudition. For instance, Shakespeare acquired more essential history from Plutarch than most men could from the whole British Museum. That is, the poet should develop the consciousness of the past. He should continue to develop his consciousness throughout his career. For this purpose, the poet has to surrender himself to tradition. In this sense, the progress of an artist is a continual self-sacrifice, a continual existence of personality. In the second part, Eliot elaborates this process of continual surrender and self-sacrifice on the part of the poet. He compares the poet to a catalyst agent in a chemical process. In the chemical process of producing sulfuric acid, two gases, oxygen and sulfur dioxide, are mixed in the presence of a platinum filament. After the process is over, the filament does not change. It remains unaffected. The poet is a catalyst like the platinum filament. However, the elements mixed are different in the case of poet. They are not gases. They are emotions and feelings. The artistic expression of the poet is not analogous to any new artistic or common experience. This experience may be the result of the combination of one or more emotions and one or more feelings. This is the reason why great poetry can be written without the direct use of any emotion. It may be made solely of feelings. Eliot cites Canto 10 from Dante's Inferno as an example. The possible combinations of emotions and feelings are of a great variety. Also, greatness in poetry is not due to intensity of emotions or feelings. It is due to intensity of the artistic process under which the fusion takes place. Here, to support his point, Eliot cites a number of instances from great literature. According to Eliot, the poet's mind is a receptacle for seizing and storing up numberless feelings, phrases, images which remain there until all the particles which can unite to form a new compound are present together. While engaged in the poetic or creative process, the poet has no personality of his own and he becomes a medium in which impressions and experiences combine in peculiar and unexpected ways. It is not in his personal emotion, the emotions provoked by particular events in his life, that the poet is in any way remarkable or interesting. Stating that seeking new human emotion may sometimes result in perversion. Eliot points out that, I quote, "The business of the poet is not to find new emotions, but to use the ordinary ones in working them up into poetry, to express feelings which are not in actual emotion at all, and emotion which he has never experienced will serve his turn as well as those familiar to him," unquote. In this light, according to Eliot, Wordsworth's definition that poetry is, quote, "emotion recollected in tranquility," unquote, is wrong. The poetic process for Eliot is a concentration, not recollection, and results in a variety of experiences, not necessarily those of the poet. Therefore, Eliot emphasizes, poetry is not turning loose of emotion, but an escape from emotion. It is not the expression of personality, but an escape from personality. The third part, which is a brief conclusion, Eliot observes, the emotion of art is impersonal, and the poet cannot reach this impersonality without surrendering himself wholly to the work to be done. In the summing way, let us see how modern poets were different from Victorian poets in several ways. First, the modern poets thought that the Victorian values like self-restraint, order, balance, and reason were not relevant to modern life. Second, they considered that Victorian sense of self-complacency and superficial morality were only hypocritical. Third, they found that Victorian thematic concerns and style of language were no longer appealing. Fourth, they wrote poems on modern issues, problems of the modern man, and the complexities of urban life. Last but not the least, they succeeded in employing a new poetic idiom by adopting the technique of symbolism and imagism.
We are listening to Dr. K. Rani Rajita Madhuri on the topic T.S. Eliot's Tradition and Individual Talent from English for UG third year students.
Education at your doorstep. That was a program of learning for everyone. Brought to you by Dr. B.R. Ambedkar Open University. So listeners, it's bye till our next radio lesson.